Tens of thousands of spectators will be heading to the Melbourne Cricket Ground today to watch Australia take on India in the Boxing Day Test. The outing marks the end of a terrible year for the men's cricket team. Three players remain suspended after cheating during a test match in South Africa in March, and governing body Cricket Australia has since lost its CEO and its chair.
The leadership group knew about it. My integrity, the team's integrity, the leadership group's integrity has come into question, and rightfully so.
It seemed completely beyond belief that the Australian cricket team had been involved in cheating. After all, our cricketers are role models, and cricket is synonymous with fair play.
We have offered sanctions to the three players. Today, as you know, they are travelling home to Australia.
I'm extremely sorry. I really, really regret that. And it's going to be a decision that's going to stick with me for the rest of my life.
Had some tough days, but they're sort of few and far between now. I still have moments and have my ups and downs. But yeah, I'm going okay and heading in the right direction.
That was Australia's former Test captain, Steve Smith, speaking last week. He's, of course, hoping to regain his place in Australia's Test side next year as players and administrators look to win back the trust and support of the public. Jeff Lemon is a cricket commentator and writer, and he's the author of the book Steve Smith's Men, Behind Australian Cricket's Fall. Welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning.
Now, Jeff, this all started in March when Cameron Bancroft was caught using sticky tape to try to tamper with the ball during a test match in South Africa. Was it sticky tape or sandpaper, actually?
Well, originally the claim was that it was sticky tape because that was sort of a way to try to make it seem a bit more impromptu and a bit less planned, that, oh, we just grabbed a bit of tape out of the kit bag. But it ended up being sandpaper. So
yes,
the initial line
was tape. You
don't
normally have sandpaper in your bag.
Well, you do actually as a batsman, because you might have a little sort of a rough edge on the bottom of a cricket bat or something that you want to smooth off. So it's not entirely illegitimate to have sandpaper, but usually you leave it in the dressing room.
Yeah, okay. Well, we have seen incidents like this before in cricket, but why was it such a dramatic thing this time round?
It's an interesting question, and it's one that we've wrestled with a lot over the course of this year, with people asking, why was there such an extreme response? Why did you have people across Australia feeling this deep emotional reaction, and have politicians weighing in and have this response from around the world? Because players from other countries have been caught ball tampering any number of times, and it hasn't prompted this sort of response. But I think it was a number of factors, one of which is just how seriously Australians take cricket, and that was proved in the response, that people have this sort of almost mythological idea that cricket is about decency and fairness and doing the right thing. And then suddenly you've got not just a report of players doing the wrong thing, but close-up video images, slow motion, you know,
it was such
incredibly
a bad
accurate
look.
Pictures. Well, but it was so clear that it had happened.
Yes.
You know, there was no way to argue or to try to mitigate it.
Do you think it was a bit of the final straw, that this has been a sort of a slow burn about concern around the culture of the club?
Yeah, and that's the other factor, is that I think for a couple of decades there'd been at least some section of the audience within Australia had been saying they didn't really like the way that the Australian team went about its business, because, you know, not all players, but a lot of players were very aggressive, very abrasive on the field, sort of got in the faces of opposition players. There was a lot of kind of berating of opponents and various things that were picked up on stump microphones that were pretty unedifying. And there was a portion of the public that said, we don't like this, and a portion that said, we don't mind because this team's winning and that's just the way they go about it. And,
so
and
if
the players
you're winning, it's
all
okay.
Bought into that. Well, for the players, I think, yeah, we had this line from Steve Smith a lot saying, we don't mind how people outside the camp see us because we're happy with our own behaviour. So they weren't willing to take on that feedback.
When do you think the problems with the Australian team started then? How far back do these cultural issues begin?
It's an interesting one, and it's a bit hard to define because you can always find a level of sort of on-field aggression and abrasiveness, you know, dating back decades in Australian cricket. But I think it was from the late 90s under Steve Waugh when it started to be codified. He was the one who gave sledging that sort of euphemistic term of mental disintegration, which sort of tried to legitimise it. It was using this bland sort of terminology to describe something that was actually quite unpalatable in a way that made it seem legit. And that was when I think the myth really got going among Australian players as new players came in, that you've got to be unpleasant on the field, otherwise you're not going to win, which of course is ridiculous. Plenty of teams win without doing that. But in Australia, that became the accepted norm.
So it was October we saw a review of the ball tampering incident that was released by the Ethics Centre, Simon Longstaff. Mm-hmm. He found that the Australian players, and you've sort of alluded to it really, live in a gilded bubble, disconnected for much of the year from families, friends and the grounding influence of community. What do you think it's like to be a player in Australia's test team in these years?
I think in a lot of ways it's hugely difficult, and people sometimes find it hard to take that on because they think, well, you know, these guys are being paid the base contract's nearly $1 million a year, and then you throw in all the match payments and senior players are getting more and endorsement deals, and, you know, there are cricketers making a huge amount of money, but there aren't many cricketers making a huge amount of money. It's only the top sort of 15, 20 in the country who are getting those big paydays. The rest are still in domestic cricket where they're not making that much. And then, as you say, they're on the road all the time. They're in hotels, you know, 300 days of the year, watching movies at night and eating sort of room service and just not having any connection with the outside world and not even seeing their own families that much. So it's difficult, I think, if you come out of a pathway system. Like Steve Smith left high school at 17 to go and play professional cricket in England, and that's all he did from that point on.
So there's no life experience there.
Yeah, but how are you supposed to have a broader perspective if you've never been able to, you've never had that opportunity?
Geoff Lemon, we saw the heat really sort of go towards the players at the time. Cricket Australia sort of got off lightly in comparison. They didn't shoulder much of the blame, certainly, but it turned. June, we saw the CEO, James Sutherland, resign after 17 years in the job, and the Cricket Australia chair, David Peaver, had his contract renewed in October, and then just days later he resigned after the release of that Longstaff report. Why did it take so long for the top officials to feel the heat?
Well, that's an interesting one because the report was into the culture of Cricket Australia as well as the culture of the team. Or there were two reviews running side by side looking at those different factors. And what we saw there was a demonstration being enacted of the way that the culture at Cricket Australia had worked, where there was a complete lack of accountability for certain figures at the top of the organisation. If you were powerful enough, you weren't held accountable for your mistakes. And there were plenty of examples of that before 2018 and the sandpaper saga. So those sort of high-ranking types at Cricket Australia had set themselves up as the judge and jury for the players and had handed down the bans, but hadn't been willing to take any sort of responsibility themselves for the fact that the culture they'd created had influenced that team and that team was a product of its culture.
Yeah, and so the Longstaff review found that there was an arrogance and a controlling approach by Cricket Australia. But I wonder, on the back of these resignations, just how far Cricket Australia has come in recent months then. Do you think that they're on the road to genuine reform or just paying lip service here?
I think they have the opportunity for reform, but we're yet to see whether they'll actually take that. The point that's worth making is that it took an extraordinary amount of public pressure to force those resignations from Cricket Australia. It took an absolute public rage and backlash, which only came out of a very specific set of circumstances. So that tells you that CA is not likely to be reactive to anything except for extreme pressure. They're not actually accountable to anyone. They're a tax-exempt body, so effectively they're a publicly subsidised body, but but there's no overseeing committee. There's no direct government control. There's no opposition party, as it were, to try to keep them in line. So CA is able to basically do what CA wants, and the only thing that they have pushing against them is public opinion.
This morning we're talking to Jeff Lemon. He's a cricket commentator and writer and author of the book Steve Smith's Men Behind Australian Cricket's Fall, and we're talking about where cricket has been this year and where it's going. Let's talk about the team, Jeff. Tim Payne, who was the batsman and he was a wicketkeeper, he took over as captain after Steve Smith stood down. What sort of influence has he had on the team? It feels to me like he's evened the keel.
Yeah, I think he's been exceptional in very trying circumstances. He had to take over as stand-in captain halfway through the test in Cape Town. Then he had to captain the final test of that series in Johannesburg, where understandably that team was completely smashed. They lost by nearly 500 runs. Then captain a tour to Dubai, a couple of test matches over there, and now back into the home summer as someone who's never been a household name in Australian cricket. But what he's done, and most importantly what he did right away at Johannesburg, was say, we recognise the problems that have happened and we recognise that we've lost the faith of a lot of the public, and we want to be a team that people can be proud of. And that's been the underlying philosophy for him, and he's tried to drill that into every new player who's come into the team since, that's their number one priority. They have to play in a way that makes people proud and that doesn't leave room for them to be discredited.
Which is hard when they're copping sledging on the field themselves at this time when they know everybody's watching them.
Well, exactly. But it's one of those interesting cases where Australia has more ground to make up than anyone else. So people will often say, well, what about this team? They did this or they did that. No other team has the reputation that Australia has, which has developed over years and years of deserving that reputation. So it's not necessarily the current players' responsibility, but they're still the ones who have to make back that ground if they want to win people over again.
So Steve Smith's allowed back in March next year. He gave a press conference last week. There's certainly a lot of effort being made to rehabilitate. He sidestepped questions, though, about whether he'd like to be the Australian captain again. What do you think? Will he ever make it to the top again?
Well, it's possible. He's got another year of being banned from the captaincy, so he can come back as a player, but then there's a further 12 months where he's banned from any leadership position. So it wouldn't be until sort of April 2020 before, or 2019 rather, sorry, 2020, before he'd be eligible to lead a side again. And I think it depends a bit on who's running Cricket Australia at the time and what they want to do. If they want to immediately rehabilitate him and put everything behind them, they'll probably seek to make him captain. But there's no pressing need to make him captain. He wasn't necessarily a great captain. He was a great batsman who happened to be the captain. So the question I would have is why there would be a pressing need to do it when there could be
particularly when
candidates.
He showed that he lacked leadership skills, really.
Well, exactly. And that was, you know, that's the main defining part of the whole story, is that he had an idea that that things were awry in his team and he didn't do anything about it.
Mm. Now, we've been talking about the bad news for Australian cricket this year, but there actually have been successes, and in particular, the women's game. Where do you think Cricket Australia can focus attention to help make 2019 a better year?
Well, it's a fascinating one, given the way that, you know, the focus has always been on the men's team, and people have talked about the culture of men's cricket as though it's completely unable to be swayed. They say, this is how Australia plays, hard, in your face, aggressive, that's how it is. The women's team don't play that way, and they're world champions time and time again. They're easily the best cricket side in the world. They've got an incredible spread of talent. You've seen that the way that every player in that World T20 squad, having won over there in November, has come back into the Big Bash and dominated. You know, Elise Perry was batting at 7 at the World T20. She's opening the batting in the Big Bash and making centuries every other match. So there's this incredible spread of talent within the Australian women's team. And I think they've really started to capture people's imagination precisely because they're different and they go about things a different way and they look like they love the game and they enjoy playing and they don't have to turn it into a sort of macho kind of testosterone contest.
And I've heard that on the ground, just at that club level and junior level, that the girls' cricket is really coming along.
Yeah, it's flying. The sign-up numbers are massive year on year. There's a huge push from CA to get into schools and make sure they get more girls playing cricket as kids, to just to give them the message that this game is for you as well. And that's been the one massive success for Cricket Australia. They've had a lot of failings over the last few years, but that's been the one area where they've absolutely smashed it.
Well, that's a nice positive note. Just to finish with them, we can't wrap up without talking about today's Boxing Day test. What's your prediction?
Well, I tipped Australia 3-1 before the series, and I'm still reasonably confident with that. I think they're probably a weaker side on paper, but they've got home advantage and they should be able to make it count.
All will unfold today. Jeff, thank you for talking to us.
No, lovely to
enjoy
chat
the day.
And good morning.
It's Jeff Lemon, a cricket commentator and writer and the author of the book Steve Smith's Men, Behind Australian Cricket's Fall. Go the Aussies.